And now we have the audiobook review, and this month's it's Heartburn by Nora Ephron.
Nora Ephron, 1941 to 2012, was an American writer and filmmaker, known for her sharp, funny voice and keen observations about relationships, food and domestic life. She began her career in journalism and essay writing in the 1960s and 70s, publishing acclaimed collections such as Crazy Salad, 1975, and Scribble Scribble, 1978. Her semi-autobiographical novel Heartburn, 1983, established her as a novelist. The same year she earned wide recognition as a screenwriter with the film Silkwood, 1983. Ephron became a defining figure in modern romantic comedy as a writer, and later a director, of landmark films including When Harry Met Sally, 1989, This Is My Life, 1992, Sleepless in Seattle, 1993, Michael, 96, You've Got Mail, 98, and Julie and Julia, 2009. She also published popular essay collections later in her career, like I Feel Bad About My Neck, 2006. Across genres, Ephron's blend of wit, candidness, and domestic detail made her a hugely influential cultural voice and helped shape contemporary screenwriting and comic memoir.
So, we're actually here in the afternoon. We normally meet on a Monday morning, but we're here on a Thursday afternoon in the studio, and Demi and I are reviewing Nora Ephron's Heartburn, which I think we both enjoyed. I've certainly
very
enjoyed
much,
it.
Yeah, it is. A lovely feminist novel. When I say lovely, I don't mean that it was necessarily an easy thing to listen to in some places, but it was very well written and I felt just empowered.
It's set in the 70s, so it's not completely contemporary. And obviously, there's certain things that happened in the 70s, second wave feminism, that were around that time. But I don't think women necessarily quite had the status that they have these days, and I think it was certainly an era where things were changing, but hadn't changed completely. I'm not saying we've got equality now by any means, but it's written from the author's perspective, and it's actually autobiographical because she was actually married to Carl Bernstein, who was one of the Watergate journalists.
So the version I listened to, the Caliber version, did have an introduction where the author gave context. You know, she said, I am not a food writer. I made that bit up, but this bit is real and this bit is real. And my husband didn't like me writing that book. And that's hardly fair because I didn't really like him having an affair.
That's right.
Which caused me to write the book. So, yeah.
He tried to sue her. Well, he did sue her, but unsuccessfully. She was married to him. She was pregnant at the time when he had the affair. And so, yeah, I can imagine why she felt the way she did. In fact, she wanted to write about it. So, yeah, it's autobiographical, but obviously names have been changed. And it really does examine a marriage that's falling apart, doesn't it? It's quite sad in a lot of ways.
It is sad, and it's not even a long-term marriage. They haven't been married that long.
No. And she's 7 months pregnant when she starts to retell the tale of her husband's infidelity and what's been going on.
And we're not giving you spoilers. This is, you know, right from the beginning. This is about her discovering that he's been having an affair with someone who is too tall. She's very clear about this. Too tall, with a nose as long as a thumb. And I thought to myself, I started measuring my own nose. I'm like, but my nose is as long as a thumb. But I think they don't mean from top to bottom. They mean from face outwards, which is quite a long nose.
Yeah, that's a very funny scene. And I think we should include an excerpt from the audiobook. Let's have a listen.
I told them a little about Thelma. I said she had a nose as long as a thumb and walked like a penguin. That made me feel better. I said Mark was a schmuck, and that made me feel even better. I told the part about all three of them going to see the Central American burrito and her dwarf dog, and I said how unfair it was that I couldn't even date.
She must be feeling better, said Alice. She's making jokes.
Oh, she makes jokes even when she's feeling terrible, said Vera. Don't let her fool you.
Why do you have to make everything into a joke? Asked Diana.
I don't have to make everything into a joke, I said. I have to make everything into a story, remember?
How do you feel? Asked Eve.
Hurt, angry, stupid, miserable,
I thought for a moment.
And guilty.
Yes, and it's how she navigates that, really.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And she's also a food writer and seems to have a TV show as well. So there are recipes interspersed in it, which I thought was quite interesting.
Yeah.
She would say how to make salad dressing or how to make an apple pie or something like that.
And the funny one was the rice pudding recipe. She said, I'm not going to give a rice pudding recipe because not many people like it. And if you like it, you will have a version you like. And if you marry someone who likes it, you will have to learn to like it. But, yeah, no one is going to go out of their way to make a rice pudding, are they?
That's true. But there is a good structure to the story by using these recipes that sort of get you from one chapter to the next. She's suffering. I mean, obviously suffering quite badly. She's discovered this affair that her husband's having. But she does it with great wit and humour. And I think that's what drives you through the book, isn't it? It's very funny.
Yeah. I have one favourite bit, and that is her way of getting her own back on the lady with the very long nose who has stolen her husband away by spreading a rumour that she has a lady's infection, which I thought was hilarious.
And sat telling it to the biggest gossip that she knows. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we should have a clip of that particular piece.
Definitely.
Yeah, definitely have a clip there.
She wanted some legal advice, I said. She got the infection in a Vietnamese restaurant in Virginia, and she wants to sue him. She got it from something she ate or from the toilet seat, said Betty. The toilet seat, I guess, I said, although I'm not sure. Maybe from the spring rolls. Oh, God, said Betty. Poor Thelmer. Poor Thelmer, I said. I feel so sorry for her, said Betty. Don't feel too sorry for her, I said. It's curable. Eventually. Maybe I should have her and Jonathan to dinner, said Betty. Don't, I said. Why not? Said Betty. It's not catching, is it? No, I said. It's just that she's so depressed. She's no fun to be around. I think we should have a dance, said Betty. What? I said. The three of us? You, me, and Thelma. I hate dances, I said. Oh, it'll be fun, Rachel, said Betty. I can't dance, I said. Come on, said Betty. Where do you think we should do it? The White House, I said. That's a great idea, said Betty. They're always talking about opening it up to the public. I'll call the social secretary. Betty. Oh, and let's have lunch, the three of us, next week, Tuesday. Tuesday I have to be in New York to do a cooking demonstration. Rachel, you really are impossible, said Betty. Thelma and I will have lunch on Tuesday. We'll plan the dance. It'll make Thelma feel better about her infection, and you'll have something to take your mind off the robbery. My mind isn't on the robbery, I said. Good, said Betty. Start making a guest list. Thelma's going to want to invite the Kissingers, I said. Is that the kind of dance you want to have?
Yeah, that's a great scene and funny, and she knows because of her community that gossip will get around. She is part of a Jewish community and she seems to have a lot of friends in that community and they all seem to know each other. And I think the kind of Jewish sense of humour comes across in it as well, quite self-deprecating. But yeah, it's fun. No, fun's not the right word.
But it is kind of fun, isn't it? It's a serious message. And I love this when a writer on whatever format, I mean, for me, it's plays generally, but the same in a novel. If they can take something that's quite serious and find the light side without disrespecting the serious message, because life is funny. Life is very hard as well.
Yeah.
But you can always find the funny moments.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's her way of dealing with her pain, isn't it?
Yeah.
By cracking jokes, basically, and telling anecdotes and being funny. And even some of her friends say to her, oh, you're kind of covering up what you're really feeling by being funny. And she sort of says, yes, but I'd rather be funny and then be sitting here crying, which is probably a good point.
Yeah. So you spoke about the way Nora Ephron uses recipes to punctuate the story.
Mm.
And that seemed quite a dramatic function to me. So with my background in theatre, this is how I would use incidental music between scenes, you know, to set the tone. And it wasn't till a bit later that someone said, oh, she's the person who wrote When Harry Met Sally.
Mm.
And you've just told me Sleepless in Seattle.
Yeah.
So you can see the beginnings of dramatic writing, can't you? Because it is quite a visual book.
Yes. Very much so. She was a journalist before then. And she's written, I mean, I think most people know Sleepless in Seattle and When Harry Met Sally. Oh. They were the very, very famous rom-coms.
Mm.
So she says quite openly that everything in her life is open to copy, as she would say, as to be written about. So I think she's used a lot of her own experience in these films and in the writing. I think it's quite brave to write very personal things. Do you? I mean,
yeah, definitely. People have said to me, oh, why don't you write a play about sight loss? And yeah, I could do that, but I don't like to just be defined by my disability, you see. But then again, I'd much rather someone wrote about sight loss from first-hand knowledge than someone write a blind character in.
Yes,
which
that's
can
true.
Really offend me.
Yeah.
So would I do that? Probably not. I have written a semi-autobiographical monologue, but it's not something I do as a rule, so I think she's really brave.
Yeah, yeah. I do too. I prefer my private life to say private, but she seems to put everything out there, and I think, obviously, with this particular novel, I think it's brutally honest as to how she felt during the time, whether it's a biased view and it's her view, and obviously her husband would have a different take on it. But I think it is very brave to put absolute details of your personal life out there. But she seems brazen about it, and she says there's nothing that's off limits. So either you kind of wear your heart on your sleeve and you tell everybody how you're feeling, or prefer not to.
Yeah, which is great, because there'll be other women going through what she's going through.
Yeah.
And, they will find a link with it and hopefully be uplifted. It is an uplifting story.
Yes, we're talking about a marital affair, but as you say, it's not depressing by any...
No, it's about her taking control of the situation, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes, I think we've got a great example of that in the audio book. Let's listen to an excerpt.
My mother taught me many things when I was growing up. But the main thing I learned from her is that everything is copy. She said it again and again, and I have quoted her saying it again and again. As a result, I knew the moment my marriage ended that someday it might make a book, if I could just stop crying. One thing I'm proudest of is that I managed to convert an event that seemed, to me, hideously tragic at the time, to a comedy. And if that's not fiction, I don't know what is.
Shall we go through our three top reasons for listening to this audiobook? What do you think, Debbie?
It's short. What was it, about six hours?
6 hours? Yeah.
Yeah.
We seem to be always going
for short. Yes, but you see, this is relevant, really, isn't it, for talking newspaper listeners? Because I can't, unfortunately now, because I can't read physically, I can't read a long book because it takes so much longer to listen to a book.
Yeah.
Yes, you can put it on double speed. So this is really a factor of consideration, isn't it? Because it will probably take the average person about 6 hours to read a longer book.
Yeah.
So this sort of puts us on a level pegging. This is a good way to spend 6 hours of your time. As we've said, it's a good feminist novel without it being...
It's not preachy, is it?
It is not preachy. It's a good story. It's a non-preachy, uplifting feminist novel, and it's very funny. Those are my three. What about you?
No, I agree with that. And I think any gentleman listening would enjoy it too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's not just for women in that sense. It's a funny novel. And I think anyone can empathise with the characters. I mean, we've probably all been through relationships where something awful's happened. So in that case, it's a good listen for that. I mean, she's a very believable character. She's a very warm character. So you instantly warm to her. And you want to know what's going to happen to her and how she's going to resolve all these issues she's got. I think if you have to listen to a novel about a marriage breakup, this is probably the best one to do it, because it is light-hearted with a very serious undertone. And I think she's achieved that very well. I mean, that's quite a delicate balance, I think, as a writer.
Is it a novel?
Oh, good question. Is it a novel? Is it a piece of...
It's therapeutic for her, isn't it? I'm not sure. I suppose it is sort of a novel, but it's not necessarily a fictional novel, if that makes sense. It's based on
a lot of fact, yes.
It's a story with a beginning, a middle and an end, which is factually accurate.
Mm.
In the introduction on the Caliber version, she does talk about that point, is it a novel or not? And lots of people have said it's not. I think it is a novel, but not in the conventional way.
Yeah. I could see her doing stand-up and having that sort of routine, doing it to an audience, and that would be quite funny.
Yeah.
A really easy listen. I didn't struggle to listen to it at all. I didn't have to go back and re-listen to any of it.
No, it was
very straightforward. Mm. 6 hours. If you've got a couple of afternoons free, there you go. Mm. That's what you should be doing, listening to this book. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Debbie. I'll see you next time.
Thank you for suggesting it. Great book.